We're going to hear now about some research with Dr. Amy Elliott, recently published in Pediatrics. She begins by explaining cohort studies.
This work really started through work that's been going on for a number of years with both the Safe Passage study and now with the ECHO study, which stands for Environmental Influences on Child Health Outcomes. This study in particular involves three different sites around the country, and we combine data to help answer questions that any one of us didn't have quite enough information to do alone. And so this is really the power of being able to be involved in these large national studies, is you can have much greater numbers and answer more complicated questions. The thing we love about being able to do this work is the Dakota, South Dakota is highly represented now in these large national studies.
And so you focused on parents, you focused on kids, you focused on doctors.
Right. So this study in particular, this analysis was looking at parents' reports of their kids. And so how satisfied do the parents see their kids? And life satisfaction includes things like happiness, well-being, do they have everything that they need? Just how satisfied are they with their life? And we looked at two different groups, one group of kids with chronic condition they were dealing with versus another that didn't. And what was new in this study is it showed that the kids with chronic illness had the same degree of life satisfaction as those who didn't. It didn't diminish their life satisfaction just because they were dealing with a chronic condition.
This is the parents' perspective.
It is
happiness.
The parents' perspective. And it's for kids in this part that was in this study between ages 5 and 9. So a lot of times you're dependent on parent report during that time. This is the measure that we use to measure life satisfaction. It's a relatively new one that's part of kind of a movement of focusing more on the positive side of health and not just the when health goes wrong or when there's problems with it. And there's been very little that's been done with kids in this area.
So is this a survey sent out to parents, or is this just something that parents do and I forgot that maybe I did it at one time?
This particular one was an online survey that we did with parents that were part of the Safe Passage study. And we learned a lot about their kiddos when they were pregnant and during that first year of life. And now we're able to follow them, some of them through adolescence. And so the group of individuals that participated in this, we've been part of their lives for a long time.
So there's that trust, and you trust that they're being honest with you.
You know, we have found that's always a question you get asked, too, when you're asking people to report on things, especially if it's a sensitive topic. Are they being truthful with you? And what we have found is that far more often people are being truthful and are trying to really do the best they can by the research. You can't say that it never happens, that people don't tell the truth, but I think it's kind of best to assume the good. And more often than not, I think, especially around here, we've got a pretty trustworthy group.
And you have how many people that you have regular survey contact with? Are you Joe T., you want to start?
Sure. So we right now are following close to over 2,000, 2,100 or so moms and their kids, and that were in the Safe Passage study, but now have consented for us to follow them through the PASS ECHO, so this new study.
Okay. Now, so you started with these when they were pregnant, right?
Mm-hmm.
Really? It's been that long?
It has been.
It's been 13 years. We've kind of been a part of their lives now. It just feels like that.
And the youngest kid that was part of Safe Passage is age three now, and mm-hmm. the oldest is 10. And these families have consistently let us into their world and into their lives and are trying to be able to contribute to studies like this that can get out and make an immediate difference in clinical care.
So let me ask you this. When you first started this study 10, 13 years ago, did you imagine that this is the kind of data that you would get? Or are doors opening up because you have so many people willing to share?
Now, that's a good question. You know, I don't know that we quite would have envisioned all the things that became possible over these past 13 years of doing this very community-based type research. And I think one of the things that surprised me the most is how unusual it is for research to happen in this way and in this going on for a decade and a half, especially in areas like the Dakotas. Oftentimes we're not represented in these large-scale national studies, and everyone, the NIH, other grantees are all so excited to work with us. We knew we had a great set of participants who would help with answering all kinds of important questions, but I think that national embracement of what we're trying to do has really, really catapulted us kind of in the next level.
And it's statewide? Women statewide, families statewide, or is there a concentrated area?
No, so the Safe Passage study had about had five sites in North and South Dakota. But for the past ECHO cohort, we have two participants from two sites, so Sioux Falls and Rapid City, a part of the study.
Okay. So you're getting a good mix, though.
Definitely. Yes. And we try to, you know, we really try to put studies where they're needed the most. And where we can get great representation. And so this, in particular, this study included participants from Sioux Falls and Rapid City.
So this is really getting feedback from parents. But some of the other studies that were a part of this paper published, they were elsewhere and asked different questions?
Yes. And so, actually, we asked the same questions.
Okay.
But the other groups were in New York and South Carolina. And are all part of this ECHO cohort. And so what we're doing as part of ECHO is we have a whole bunch of stuff we're doing, stuff being questionnaires, even different tasks that kids do so we can assess development, that is happening at actually 71 different sites across the country. And in total, there'll be 50,000 kids that will participate. And we're all doing the exact same thing. Now, we also have all these unique things that we're doing that just are happening at our sites, just like New York and South Carolina have things they're just doing. But what we can do is combine our data to be able to help answer just larger questions that you can't do with just one study. So it kind of gets more mileage out of this wonderful gift that participants give us, the parents and the kids, so that we can even answer more questions than we can come up with on our own.
So was it a surprise to learn that kids with chronic illnesses are happy?
You know, yeah, a little bit.
Really?
I mean, not that they aren't happy, but I think that when you think of kids with chronic illness, a lot of times you think greater stress, which is true. We did find that, you know, kids with chronic illness had more stress, but the fact that that doesn't define them in any way, I think is very encouraging for parents of kids that just get diagnosed with, like, asthma, for example. You think about what it is we want for our kids. We want them to be happy and healthy. But knowing if they have some health challenges, that doesn't have to affect the happiness side of the equation. It's kind of broadening the definition of health, which is, I think, really exciting.
And to just add what Amy said, you know, health is, it's not just the absence of disease, right? But it's absence or presence, but also looking at what are things that make it more positive. So I think it'll resonate with parents that across the country.
But, you know, you see those heart-wrenching stories of sick kids and how strong they are and how positive they are. And so that's what I was thinking. I'm like, well, of course they're fine. Of course they're well cared for and mentally content, because you see them and they talk, but of course that's just a handful.
You know, but I think you're exactly right. And I think what this tells us is that's more the rule than the exception. And I just think it's a great message for clinicians to know and families to know and kids to know. And a lot of times we don't focus on the positive sides of health. We focus a lot on things that go wrong. And one thing that's really exciting about ECHO is there's a big focus on what goes right.
But there are negatives
that
you found.
Sure.
And what is the biggest negative?
The one that struck really close to, or is something I think we need to particularly pay attention to in our region, is socioeconomic status played a role. That those in higher socioeconomic status showed higher levels of happiness and life satisfaction. And our thought was that stress from parents dealing with financial woes, other types of things, does trickle down to the kids and can affect well-being as well as health and things that we already know socioeconomic status can put a lot of strains on. And so I think that's something in particular we need to keep paying attention to in our region and others.
Is there such thing as sickness guilt that a kid could take on, that if only they weren't sick, then they would have more?
I think in all...
Something to study.
It is something to study. I was just kind of, I don't know that I would want to make those leaps necessarily given this information, right. But you could see where that could happen with some kids.
Perhaps the older age group.
Maybe where, a little bit older, yeah.
Right, as they get older and get more conscious about, you know, their health, mm-hmm. and then they more internalize what's going on, I think perhaps that's the time frame.
See some tolls, yeah, that could be. But that could be an interesting thing to incorporate. See, look, you're a scientist at heart. I knew it.
Well, I'm just nosy. So what other, I mean, to talk a little bit more about some other things that you're gleaning from some of your surveys that might lead to future discoveries. Yeah.
So, you know, this is one of the fun things about working in a group like this is it's not just the work we're doing, but everyone else that we get to learn from and incorporate into ours. The surveys actually are just one part of what we do, and we do them online so that people don't have to schlep into the office all the time. But we also do EEGs, for example, on kiddos as young as 1 month and as old as, I think, 13 years we're going to go up to with doing that. So we can actually look at how the brain is working and processing different information. And with attention and with self-regulation, so ability to kind of plan ahead, make some decisions, control your impulses a bit. So we'll have all these biological markers as well, and we can see how some exposures very early on in life, and those could be, you know, a lot of times we think of like a prenatal alcohol, prenatal smoking, which we've studied quite a bit, but also things like social stressors, socioeconomic status, for example, or maternal depression, or nutrition, all those broadly defined categories, how they affect development.
And then when you do these tests and these surveys, are they marked? I mean, do you know that it's the same child with the same survey, that kind of thing?
Yes. So yeah. We have a very elaborate tracking mechanism that's with an online web-based system that kind of tracks each participant through the life cycle.
So you know who they are.
We know who they are, yes.
But then you block that out?
Typically research has where you assign a code to each participant, which sort of links their name with their research number. And so when we communicate about them, we use the code so that you're not using their name all the time. But when we publish about research, we never use their names or any identifiers.
So now how can pediatricians take this research and use that?
Yeah, I think that's one of the most fun things about this analysis is it's got direct ramifications for clinical practice. You know, kids get diagnosed with chronic conditions every day. And that is quite a lot for parents to take in. And to also think this might not be going away anytime soon. It's something kids have to live with. But knowing that they'll have more challenges on dealing with that condition, but that doesn't have to limit them in how their well-being and life satisfaction and happiness. It doesn't have to limit them in that way, which I think, as hard as it is to deal with any sort of issue your kids might be facing, gives a kind of a little bit of a light that people can focus on as well.
Is there an educational component for parents in how to treat your child that, you know, you just move forward?
I think that health, a health condition, a chronic health condition doesn't need to define a kid. that there's a lot more there in terms of what makes up their full life and how satisfied they're going to be.